So I think we are going to finish David and Bathsheba today. And then we'll move on to Avshalom next week. Really. Been here for a while. And we're not going to really discuss Sefer Shmuel at all today, because what we have left on the docket is to look at the Perek in Tehillim, Perek Lamed, Perek Nun Aleph, which is really going to give us the third leg of David's tshuva. Right? If we just take a step back and think what we've really accomplished so far. So we've seen that the primary thrust that the Navi wants us, the primary message the Navi wants us to get from the whole episode of David and Bathsheba is to think really of the sin, which the Navi seems to bend over backwards to make sound as terrible as possible. And the sin is really a corruption of David. And the idea behind that is that it's the Malchus itself which is corrupted, because David is not the first person we've seen in Sefer Shmuel to have his very core ethics be challenged and undermined by the opportunities he has as a king. Shaul HaMelech had the exact same experience, right? Shaul we met, and Shaul was a retiring, modest person, very concerned for his Na'ar, the lad who's traveling with him, extremely loyal to his father. He's running up and down the country trying to find his father's donkeys. And then a couple of chapters of kingship, and we see that this modest, generous family man can turn into someone who's completely power hungry and completely ego driven, and is, rather than caring for his servants, is trying to get his servants killed, and rather than being a family man, is just completely using his family in an attempt to maintain power, whether that's his willingness to have Yonasan killed or his willingness to use Michal to get David killed. Everything that Shaul stood for got undone by his experience with the Malchus. And David has the exact same episode here happened with Bathsheba, where he's no longer, luxuriating, and he's using the Yoav to assassinate him. The worst of the worst is that at the end, he seems to deny divine providence. And he just says, it's luck of the draw. The sword consumes whoever it consumes. The quintessential person of Emuna Bitachon, right, as he tries to cover up the sin and then cover up the cover-up, he just falls into, corruption after corruption of himself. And so then when we looked at Perek Yud-Beis and we saw the tshuva process that David undergoes, so there should be three pieces to it, but in Sefer Shmuel, we only see two. One piece we saw was David's Kabbalah Sadin, right? David's acceptance of the punishment when he's told that the child who he has been desperately trying to protect this entire time, the whole cover-up was to protect the kid, but this child is going to die. And after it happens, David accepts the punishment. It's one of the most amazing lines in Tanakh, right? He gets up off the ground. He goes to the Mishkan. He bows to Hashem. He moves on. He says, he accepts Hashem's decree in an incredible way. The second piece we could call the repair. All the damage that David does to himself. So I think we saw last week that in David's tshuva process, so he's consistently undoing all the corruption that he had inflicted upon himself. So the person who had been luxuriating in his bed and on the roof is now sleeping, leaving the palace, and he's sleeping on the floor. The person who was ignoring the Musar of Uriah is now immediately taking to heart the Musar of Nasa. The David who denied divine providence at the end of Perek Yud Aleph, well, he is all in his belief in the Midas HaRachamim in Perek Yud Beis, where even as the Gemara describes the tradition that he hands down to Chizkiyahu HaMelech, even if someone has a sword on his neck, he always has to hope that Hashem can always bail him out. So those are the two main pieces we have in Shmuel, accepting the punishment and the tikkun, right, the fixing himself, trying to undo the destruction that he had inflicted upon himself. But the main piece we're missing, it's fascinating that it's not really in Sefer Shmuel, is the piece of what we normally think of as tshuva. Where is the tefillah? Where is the regret? Where is the emotional turmoil? It makes it sound from Sefer Shmuel like that is secondary, which is really interesting. Maybe Sefer Shmuel just wants us to focus on the impact that sin can have. But when we go to Sefer Tehillim, we can see that third piece of the puzzle. So that's what we'll do, Mirz Hashem, today. So load up the source sheet. It's an absolutely amazing parak Nun Aleph. Many of the psukim we're familiar with because they've entered different parts of our davening.
And the Dat Mikra, at the end, he has a whole long thing about this. And he says, there's even more of this in davening than you think. He goes through different nischa'ot. And he talks about where in certain slichos communities, they would say this regularly in different areas. So it's really become, many of the psukim here have become a mainstay. So Tehillim, Nunal, he begins with us by telling us, Salman Sechas, Mela David, Bevoi Lev, Nasan Hanavi, Kasher Ba, El Bashem. So unclear exactly, is this, you know, almost the impression you're given is that this is like the minute that Nasan leaves the room. So he's had the message from Nasan. He's had the brutal wake up, right? His David's, you know, when David was in the cover-up zone, he wasn't only covering up the sin from the people. He really was covering up the sin from himself. That's all been stripped away from Nasan. And Parakir gives us David's own private reaction. And begin with three psukim, which clearly go together. Right, David begins by saying, "Chanini Elokim kechastecha, be gracious to me with your mercy, with your kindness, karav rachamecha mechei pesha'ai, with all of your mercy, please cleanse my sin. Herev kavseini me'abonai mechatasi tarein, right? Cleanse my sin, purify my sin." So David says three times he's emphasizing the desire for Hashem's rachamim, and three times with different languages he's emphasizing his desire for Hashem to cleanse his sin. Right now, even though David realizes that his asking for cleansing is dependent upon Hashem's rachamim, three different times, chaneini, chastecha, rachamecha, David also says there is a reason why I deserve this. Right? Not that I deserve this, but there's a reason why, you know, David has done enough to justify Hashem activating the midas harachamim. What is that? It's what David says in Pasuk, hey, really, what better pasuk is there? What better line is there that captures the profound regret of sin? Ki fisha'ai ani eda, I know that I have sinned. I am no longer denying it. I recognize it. Hakaras achet is the first step to tshuva. Have to recognize and admit to what you've done. And then v'chatasi negdi tamid, my sin is always before me. Right? Says Rashi. Itoch sheni mischaret v'doeg alav. That's all I regret and I worry over it. The sin is always before me. That's David's description of the regret. It's not just a passing moment. It's not just a regret. David is tortured by the constant awareness of his sin. He has gone from Parakeet Aleph, where he has covered it up, to now where he can't get away from it. And it is in that merit, since the sin is constantly before him, right? Ironically, since the sin is before him so much, he hopes that that will allow Hashem to wipe the sin away, right? The more present the Avera is for David, the more Hashem can erase it. Now, you also should notice that David does not use the Shem Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, right? He says, Chaneini Elokim kechastecha. The whole perek, David is not going to use the Shem Havaya, which is very surprising because normally, David uses the name Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei all the time, especially in a context when David is asking for mercy. We really would think that David would use the Shem Havaya, but it's not going to appear. It's not going to appear once. I think the reason for that is because the whole thrust of the parak here is going to be David's feeling of distance from Hashem as a consequence of his sin and his obsessive desire for that gap to be closed. He feels that he has been distanced from God, and therefore he does not even call Hashem by the Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei. Shadal, David Aluzzato, right? Very interesting Italian biblical commentator. He actually has a commentary only on this parak of Tehillim. He has a very long hagdama where he describes how beautiful the parak is, and he says that this parak really needs its own commentary. So he is going to do it. And he makes a point here in the beginning, which it becomes a running theme for him. And I think it's absolutely essential for understanding the parak that he says, David, it's interesting what David asks for here and what he doesn't ask for, right? He says, David did not say, sa na chatasi, bear my sins, salach na. David does not use languages of forbearing or forgiveness
which are actually what we normally would see in a context like this when someone asks for mercy after sin. He points out that, well, let's say in the aftermath of the Chehaiga, or in the aftermath of the Meragli. So in Moshe Davens to Hashem, the tefillah always is, please lighten up or erase the punishment that you are going to bring to Bnei Yisrael as a consequence of sin. But Shadal points out that this whole parak does not have any request for David to be saved from punishment. We've seen David has accepted the decree. Nasan told him what is going to happen, and David will daven and daven and daven. But in this parak, he is not asking to be saved from punishment, right? The whole thrust of the parak is to heal the relationship breach that has been inflicted upon David's relationship with Hashem as a consequence of this sin. And he says, you never find anything like this in Tanakh. So even Moshe didn't ask for erasing. Moshe asked for forgiveness. Moshe focuses on the punishment. I got to get the Jews to the promised land, and we got to just get there. David is not focusing on the practical side. He's focusing on his relationship with Hashem, right? And that is going to color so much of the parak. Okay. Now, Pasuk Vav is a very surprising pasuk. So after David has begged three times for Rachem, he's begged three times for Hashem to erase and purify the sin. So then David seems to minimize what he's done, but in a weird way. He says, I only sinned against you. And that's a shock. What does it mean, I only sinned against you? You know, you might hear, if you go to Uriah's Kever and you listen very carefully to the ground when you hear, you might hear Uriah say, what? You only sinned against that God? What happened to it? Is adultery with Bathsheba? There's murder of Uriah. What on earth does David mean when he says that the only avera here was an avera of Bein Adam Lamakom? The only avera was what he did to Hashem. It's very unclear what it means. So there are two basic approaches in the Mefarshim. The Radak has one. The Radak says that what David means was my sin was in private. Right, and this we haven't discussed this so much. But it's really interesting to wonder, did anybody else know about David's sin with Bathsheba? Or was the cover-up successful? So the Radak understands the pasuk here as David telling Hashem, the cover-up was successful. Nobody knows about this except for you. Right? I fully admit to you that I sin. I'm not going to deny it to you. No one else knows about it. But it's between Hashem and me. But the days of David covering it up completely are over. That's one way of understanding Lecha Levad Chachatasi. But the Malbim, and we'll see what Shadal goes in this direction as well. The Malbim says no. The Malbim says, what better proof is there for what I've been trying to say the entire time in Sefer Shmuel? Right. The Malbim was running shot in Sefer Shmuel was that the Navi was making the sins of David to be more than they actually were. The Malbim took this pretty far. Malbim said, it was Mori B'malcha, so there was a justified killing. Says it wasn't adultery at all. He thinks that Bathsheba was divorced. Not even some of the other views in Chazal, where there was adultery, but it wasn't done in a way that would prohibit Bathsheba going forward. The Malbim was all in on minimizing David's sin. And the Malbim says, what better proof do you have in this pasuk right here? He says, David's telling Hashem, I only sin to you. It's just I didn't do what Hashem wanted, even though it wasn't Shvichas Damim and it wasn't Gili Arayos. Shadal, who does not seem as positive as the Malbim was regarding David, does also go in this basic understanding. He has a couple of lines here which are great and really map onto what we said in previous weeks. It says, let's talk about Uriah for a second. So set aside the question of whether Uriah was a Morei B'malchus, right? It's the one primary way of technically justifying what David did was that Uriah was insubordinate. And we learned this, we saw that there was evidence in the Psukim that Uriah was quite mechutzef towards David.
but that this was not something which by any stretch of justice should have been convicted as Mori B'Malchus, even though maybe technically it could have fit the bill. But Shadal says, you know, there's another big piece to the Uriah question. It says, the king or the general, it's the king's prerogative to send people into places of great danger. And then he says, in fact, Uriah was probably very happy. What more does a hardened warrior, he wants to be in the thick of the fighting. Right? He wants to take on the most dangerous missions. So says, it wasn't technically murder, because David, as the commander, if it wasn't going to be Uriah who was going to be, anchoring the dangerous mission, it was going to be someone else. So the Shadal explains, that's what it means when he says, L'chalavad chachatasi. Says, David chata chet gadol neged Uriah b'kavana so hara. There's no question that David sinned in his intent against Uriah. His intent was to get Uriah killed. However, v'hine chayav v'zeh b'dine shamayim. This is a classic case when Chazal say, you have somebody who did something wrong, but it can't be punished by Beis Din. So the Gemara calls that Chayev B'dinei Shamayim V'Patur B'dinei Adam. In God's eyes, he's guilty, but in man's eyes, he's innocent. He says that's exactly what's happening over here. It doesn't mean, the Malbim understood it meant literally, I only sinned to Hashem. The way Shadal is explaining the Pasuk, it's that David only sinned in the eyes of Ribbono Shel Olam. He didn't sin in the eyes of man. He didn't do anything illegal to Uriah. The king is allowed to order his best warriors to take on dangerous missions. And then he says the same exact thing is true for Bathsheba. It says Bathsheba and her family, they're pretty happy at the end of the day to be now married to the king. And he says, Bifrat ki Uriah har ala kol shelohaya li bo be'er be'esh avata. It's a nice way of saying it, that Uriah showed everybody that he was not in burning love with Bathsheba. It's a nice way of saying that he did not seem to have any functional relationship with her at all. His new wife, who he's never at home with, and who he doesn't have any children with, and who he has no interest in seeing, she goes from having basically an absentee husband to having David HaMelech, who's the king. It's been a serious upgrade for Bathsheba. The only person. There's nobody who could sue David and say, I was wrong by you. It is only in the higher level of justice, the divine level of justice, that David did something wrong. And he has one more great line right here. And he says, right, his only sin was to Hashem. And David imagined, we said this was the worst point. David imagined that it was as if, right, Hashem's eye was not seen. David convinces himself that he's done nothing wrong. The sword consumes whoever it consumes. So that could be what's going on with this line of Lecha Levad Chatas. Either like the Radak, it means that it was done in secret. The Malbim saying that it was, we see it really only was a chait of Bein Adam Lamakom, but nevertheless, David is racked with guilt. Or the Shadal, who is suggesting that it means that David only sinned in the eyes of heaven. But at the end of the day, that's all that matters. Now, the next part of the pasuk over here, it's a little bit cryptic. David says, so I only sinned to you. Harabe necha asisi, right? I sinned in your eyes. You can see Ashadal likes that line a lot. And then he says, Laman titzdak bin varecha tiskeh b'shaftecha. So you'll be justified in your word, and you will be right in your judgment. So Shadal, Lishitaso, right, following his own opinion, says this is exactly following David's theme. David is telling, what does he mean when he says you're going to be justified or righteous in your judgment? So David is saying, I sinned to you. And even though I only sinned to you, I fully accept the consequences of your judgment. Whatever punishment you impose upon me is just. Despite the fact that there's no Beis Din on earth that could convict me, all that matters is that I was guilty in your eyes, and therefore any punishment you want to impose upon me is just. And that is Shadal emphasizing that David is not asking to escape punishment here. He is accepting punishment, and he just wants to get back into Hashem's good graces. The Pasuk Zion is also difficult to understand. Pasuk says, Hein ba'avon chalalti, I was brought forth in sin, Yachamas imit, right? In sin, my mother conceived me. So Rashi has a couple of interpretations here that maybe it means that David is referencing the fact that, look, men are, you know, mortal men are inherently sinful. So Hashem, you should forgive me because everyone has a Yetzer Hara. Maybe it's specifically referencing, Rashi suggests, the, you know, the fact that every person is created through an act of sexual relations. He says specifically that Yetzer Hara is extremely natural and inherent in the in man. The Dan Mikra, though, I think, has a view which is pretty compelling, that David is not minimizing his sin in this pasuk. Rather, David is maximizing his sin. David is saying, you know, I've been evil. I've been sinning since I was a kid, right? I was born and I was sinning. I was conceived and I was sinning. You know, Hashem tells Yirmiyahu, I knew you when you were conceived. You were still in your mother's belly. So Damikra suggests that's what's happening over here. David is saying, I've been guilty since I was conceived. I've been guilty since I was born, right? He's fully accepting his guilt and he is desperately praying to Hashem to forgive him and move past it. Right, and they quote this pasuk in Nehemiah, which we know. Maybe that's what Okay, so David now continues. And the next few psukim are the real core of the pattern. Because this is where David, after right, the opening line where he says, please have mercy on me and please cleanse my sin. And then describing the guilt that he feels, his realization he sinned, and his acceptance of the consequences for it. Now is where David gets to the core, and he, you know, we get to the ask. Here's where we get to what David really wants. David says, in pasuk after pasuk, asking to be not just cleansed, but let's look carefully. Techateinim be'azova atahir, right? So purge me with hyssop. Mepharshim point out it's, you know, comparable to a mitzora when he's being purified. So a couple weeks parsha from now, right? So the language of the ezov, which is the purification process for the mitzora, right? Wash me umisheleg albin, let me become whiter than snow. And we'll talk about this more at the end. But David is getting pretty ambitious here, right? David is not only asking for Hashem to forgive him or to wipe his sin away, but misheleg albin, I'm going to be even whiter than snow. I mean, whiter than white. You know, hold that in mind. We'll talk about it more when we get to the end of the parak. And pasuk after pasuk, Tashmini sason v'simcha, tegel na'atzamos tifisa, right? The bones which you've crushed, whether that means through punishment or whether that means because of the guilt that David already feels. So let me have simcha back. Haster panacha mechata, I hide your face from my sins, right? David earlier has said, I see my sins before me all the time. So since I see my sins before me all the time, you, Hashem, have the ability that gives you the right to hide your face from them. And then, right, we get to some of the famous lines. Lev tahar berali elokim. Some people often, I think, when they say this or they sing this, they misvowelize because they say lev tahar berali elokim. Right? They say Hashem created in the past a pure heart. But that's not what David's saying, right? David's saying, Lev Tahar, Bira, create, please now, create a pure heart for me. Please cleanse me. I know that I've corrupted myself. I know that sin has damaged me spiritually. And please undo that impact. Lev Tahar, Bireli Elokim, Ruach Nachon, Chadesh Bekerbi, right? Renew the correct spirit inside me. I know what sin has done to me, and please undo that. And then, I mean, we know this. Al Tashichene Melfanacha, this is where it comes from. This is where the pasuk comes from. Right, David is aware that he has been divided from Hashem by what he's done, and he desperately wants to come back. Please give me back the ruach hakodesh. And then David says, right, if that happens, then I can be a beacon for all future Baalei Tshuva. The whole story of David about Sheva is going to be the template for tshuva from here on out. I mean, you know, we quote this pasuk in Slichos, you know, so that's exactly as David was saying, right? So that's the core part of the parak. Exactly as Shadal described, David is just trying to get back in Hashem's good graces. He's trying to undo the damage that he's done to himself, and he's trying to undo the damage that he's done to his relationship with God. And there's only so much that he can do, right? Your regret does not give you the ruach nacha. Your regret does not give him the lev tacha. Right? At the end of the day, Hashem is going to have to come in, right? Tshuva is not a natural process. You can't, in the regular world, you can't completely undo something that you did. That's going to require the chesed and the rachamim from the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's then an interesting pasuk tezayin, which seems like, let's see, it's difficult to understand, we should see what it means. Hatzileinu midamim Elokim, so save me from blood. See, they changed the blood guiltiness. I don't know what blood guiltiness is. Elokei teshuasi, right? The God of my salvation. So Rashi says, I really don't understand Rashi, to be honest. I don't know if one of you understands it. It'll be great, because I don't get it. Rashi says, save me from blood. Shalomos b'chayra v'alon shom shal Uri achidi sharati. Please, Hashem, do not kill me as a punishment for having killed Uri. Problem with that is that Nasan has already told David, right? The parak began by telling us that this Tehillim is from when Nasan comes into David. But Nasan told David, when David said, Chatasi Lashem, he said, my sin. So Nasan said, are we here? And the good news is, you're not going to die, right? You're not going to die for what you did because you admitted you sinned. So the one piece that David already has in the bag is that Hashem is not going to kill him. This whole parak is him asking for much more than that. So I don't really understand what that means. Shadal goes in a different direction. Remember, Shadal is arguing that the whole parak is David accepting whatever punishment is going to come. So there's no way on earth he can ever read the pasuk as saying, Hashem, please save me from being punished, because that defeats all purpose. So, but he says, I really like this a lot. He says, Hatzileni shelo efteh o b'shfichas David. Please save me from sinning again with murder. Why? Because what has given David the opportunity to sin like this? The fact that he's king. What's the problem? David still is king at the end of the parak, right? It's like you have the drug addict who still has all the drugs in the room, and he's supposed to stop getting high after it's going to happen. How on earth is that going to work out? Well, David can't not be king anymore. I mean, you know, in one sense, he will lose the kingship, as we discussed, but he's still in the palace. He's still the king. So all the opportunities are still there. So then he says, that's exactly what David is davening for. So that I do not raise up my heart above my brothers, right? Which is exactly what the Torah says in Devarim, the king is not allowed to do. Kiliosi melech, yesh biadi lemale kol tavos libi. I am brutally aware that I have the opportunities to indulge whatever desires I want as king. And I can get out of it. I can avoid punishment. I can escape. Exactly as I did with Uriah, right? David was able to, who else besides the king can so easily get someone killed in a way where no Beis Din could ever get him convicted? Only David could do that. So David's aware that he has this danger still there. So he says, that's what David is asking for. Please, Hashem, give me a Lev Tahor, give me a Ruach Nachon, bring me back to square one, make it as if none of this has ever happened, erase all of the spiritual damage, but now I need something more. Now I need proactive defenses against this happening in the future. And there's only so much that I, David, can do because of the position that I'm in. The position, by the way, that Hashem put me in, because Hashem anointed me as king. So now is where I'm going to need the help from Elokei Teshuasi. Hashem has to be the God of my salvation. Hashem has to save me because, like it or not, I'm in this situation. And the only help I'm going to have going forward is if Hashem protects me as this continues. I think it's a very, very powerful idea. Just thinking of David's, you know, spiritual conscience, right? Where he's racked with guilt about sin. And he's also terrified that this could so easily happen again. And David goes on. He really has three more psukim before he gets to the conclusion. And I mean, look, like this is, you know, Hashem, literally, Hashem is beside the dach, hopi yagit l'sach. And it's amazing. And the pasuk that we begin our Shemoneh Esrei with is said by David at this moment of total despair and distance and sin, right? That pasuk becomes the beginning of our Shemoneh Esrei. It's like pretty mind-blowing. Notice also, by the way, that even though it's Hashem Sevasai Tiftach, it's not in the Yud Kevavke, right? It is written in the Shem Admas, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. Hashem, David is not yet ready to mention the name Yud Kevavke, even though, you know, we have the Hashem, the Shem Admas. Now, after that, right, after David is now, you know, davening, so the end he talks about karbanos. And the Radak has some interesting things to say about this. And this is another area where we'll see a really important, you know, contrast between David and Shaul. And then really David and some of the later attempted Baalei Tshuva in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. So why is David focusing on David? Why is he focused on Tefillah? He says, "Ki lo sachbo zevach ve'atina ola lo sirta." I know that you don't want karbanos. There are two primary vehicles for serving Hashem. One is tefillah. One is karbanos. So David is saying, I'm all in on the tefillah here. I'm not bringing any animals to the Mishkan because I know that that is not what you want. We'll have to look at the Mefarshim to see why. Right? I would give it to you. If you want it, Atena. If you want it, I would give it. But he's not bringing karbanos because that's not what Hashem wants. Why? He says, Zivcha Elokim Ruach Nishbara. Right? The karban that Hashem wants is the broken spirit. Lev nishbar v'nitzav, the broken and contrite heart. Elokim lo sivzeh, that Hashem is not going to reject. So what exactly is going on here? So the Radak has a piece here where he talks about karbanos, and I think we can, you know, expand on it a little bit. Radak points out, we know that there are definitely times where Hashem requires us to bring a karban after we've sinned. But in almost all cases, that is not a case of a sin that was intentional. It is almost always a sin that was b'shogeg, a sin that was unintentional. If someone has sinned intentionally, a karban is not going to cut it. Now, why is that? So I think that this is basically what Radak is saying. First, Radak says, look, if someone sinned intentionally, so then lo tzivah karban ela hal shogeg. Aval hu mezid haya. David did not sin unintentionally. He was amazed. He was intentional. So the only response for someone who had sinned intentionally, you can't waltz into the base of Mikdash and bring a karban. You have to break your own heart. Now, the Radak says, these are not totally different things. It says, Eker tama karbanos. Why did Hashem command us karbanos? What's the point of a karban? How does a karban achieve atonement for doing something wrong? So the Radak says, the whole purpose of the karban is to get us into that state of the broken heart and nullifying our own desires. Radak is kind of advancing the same idea, which is made very well known by the Ramban, that the person brings the karban and the experience the person has as he sees the animal shechted, and he sees the blood flowing, and he sees the blood being thrown on the mizbeach, and he sees the animal being burnt up in smoke, is the person is supposed to realize, there but the grace of God go I. Right? That, when everything that is happening to the animal is really supposed to be happening to me. And that becomes a spur and an impetus to tshuva. Now, why don't we have that when it comes to the karban b'mezid? We do have it when it comes to the case of the karban b'shogeg. I think this is, you know, kind of big stuff, but I think the answer can be very straightforward. When the person is b'mezid, so there are two things we can say. Number one, the person who's b'mezid does not need the assist of the animal to get him into the state of the broken heart. And number two, that person is too divided from Hashem to even come into the Beis HaMikdash and bring animal and bring karbanos in the first place. It is only the person who sins b'shogeg, the lower level of sin, who is still welcome into the Beis HaMikdash before he's done tshuva, because he hasn't done tshuva yet, right? And then as he says vidui and he brings his karban and he watches what happens to it, that helps him get into the position of having the broken heart and having everything else that David HaMelech and the Radak here are describing. Right, the karban is an aid to tshuva. Mezid, on the other hand, does not require that assistance, and it's too far to even walking into the Beis HaMikdash. David needs to have that tshuva independently, and that's exactly what he's saying over here. Right, I know what you want, Hashem. You want a broken heart. You don't want animals. You want what's behind the animals, and that I already have. Right. My shattered inner spiritual being is already up on the Mizbeach, as it were. And that's David's hope for tshuva. That's the role that karbanos are supposed to play. and the role that karbanos are not supposed to play. And that perspective that David presents right here in Tehillim is the polar opposite of the perspective that Shaul had when he had his confrontation with Shmuel, right, that we read a couple of weeks ago in the Haftorah for Parsha Zah, when Shaul tells Shmuel, look, we offered karbanos, and we have animals, we're bringing to Hashem. And what does Shmuel say? Very, very importantly, the first of many, many times that the Nevi'im really rant against the improper perspective on the karbanos. Does God want your burnt offerings and your peace offerings? Keshma b'kol Hashem. What he really wants is for you to listen to the divine voice. Now, there's a role for the karbanos. There's a reason for the karbanos. They work together. The problem is that Shaul has, misplaced the means for the ends. The karban is supposed to be the vehicle to a relationship with Hashem, right? And Shaul has mistaken the karban as the be-all and end. And David HaMelech is very aware, hyper aware. This whole parak is an awareness, and that the real focus is on his standing and his connection to God, or lack thereof. Right. Now, the last couple of psukim, David then zooms out, and we know this pasuk as well. You know that pasuk. Isn't it amazing how many of these psukim are just in our regular davening? So, what's David talking about? Being good to Tzion and the walls of Yerushalayim, and then David says, "Oz tachpots zivchei tzedek." Then you will accept the karbanos of the righteous. So when Yerushalayim is built, then we're going to have karbanos. Yerushalayim is built. What's David talking about? And why, a minute ago he said he wasn't bringing karbanos. Now he is. What's happening? So Rashi just has one line, which really puts it all together, that David is anticipating the ultimate rebuilding, of the ultimate building of the Beis HaMikdash. Right? What is David doing then at the end of Sefer Tehillim? He's going back to the original dream, which happens to be when Nasan comes back to him later on. Right? Nasan hasn't come back yet, but once Shlomo is born, Nasan is going to come back and is going to say, "You now, right? It's back on the original prophecy that your son will build the Beis HaMikdash, your reign will be secure. That's all going to come back." So that is what David is davening for here. David wants his own personal connection with Hashem to be restored, which has been so damaged. And he wants that promise to be restored of having the son who is going to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And then once that happens, once the relationship is intact, the Beis HaMikdash is there and we can be close with God, then we can bring karbanos, we can bring zivchei tzedek, ola v'chala. We can bring the karban, right? Shlomo can bring the karban shlamim. Because it's not from a place of weakness. We're not coming to Hashem from a place of guilt and from a place of sin. We're coming to Hashem from a place of having been cleansed, of having been purified, of having undone and erased everything we've done before. The connection is back, and then Hashem will accept our karbanos. Right? That's not where David is at yet, but that's where he's going to be in the future. So we see again this awareness that the karban is an expression of the relationship with Hashem. David is not anti-karbanos. He just wants him to be done in the proper framework. He knows that right now he's not there, but he's hoping for the ultimate forgiveness and the ultimate redemption. So I think the last thing to think about, so you take a step back and think about this whole parak, is we go back to that line when David said, make me whiter than snow, right? And how there are like two themes in this parak. One, it came up a couple of times, David saying that he wants other people to learn from his tshuva, and that he wants the sin to have not only never happened, but even things be better than they were before. We're going to end with David being whiter than snow, and we're going to end with, instead of having a mishkan, we're going to have a Beis HaMikdash and all of the karbanos being brought. The idea is that the process, this kind of tshuva, which is not a tshuva focused on fear, focused on punishment, but it is a tshuva focused on just the desire to restore the relationship with Hashem. This is exactly what the Gemara calls tshuva me'al. And the Gemara in Yuma, Daf Mem Vav, maybe the most amazing description of tshuva in Shas, right over here, it draws just perfectly on the whole upshot of this parak of Tehillim and the whole tshuva that David has expressed. Gemara says, Amar Reish Lakish, right? And if there's anybody who knows about tshuva, it's Reish Lakish, because we know that he spent a whole lot of time as, you know, as abandoned on the roads. So, G'dola tshuva shezdonos nasas lo kishkav. So first, your Reish Lakish says, tshuva is amazing because it can turn intentional sins into unintentional sins. Shneamar, famous pasuk, beginning of Shabbos, the Shabbos Shuvah of Torah, the pasuk in Hosea, Shuva Yisrael ad Hashem Elokecha ki kashalta ba'avonecha. Right, Hosea says, return to Hashem because you've been tripped up by your avon. Now, an avon is a lower level sin. So the Reish Lakish says, avon meizid hu nikakar lemichshol. An avon is a real sin, but he's calling it a stumbling block. He's calling it just a michshol. So what's going on? The answer is that through the tshuva, it can be reduced from a full-fledged sin to just a little stump. That's piece number one. Then the Gemara says, "Ein." What do you mean? It just turns the zadon into a shkaga. But v'ha amar Reish Lakish gedola tshuva shezdonos nasos lo kizechuyos. It can turn the sins into merits. Into merits. Shneamar b'shuv rasha mirishato v'asa mishpatut tzaka leikam v'chaya. Right? He's going to return from his wickedness. There'll be mishpat tzedakah, and he'll live. Living sounds, you know, it's like more than it was before. So the Gemara says, Reish Lakish says, Lokasha, or the Gemara says, Lokasha, Kame'ava, Kame'ira. When the person repents, because he's just afraid of the consequences which are going to come, so that just reduces the sin. But the tshuva me'ava, where the person is just trying to come back because he feels terrible at what he's done, he has internalized that he has betrayed Ribono Shel Olam, and he wants to undo that corruption to himself and that corruption to his relationship, that is called tshuva me'ava, and that the paradigm of that is what David is doing over here, where he's accepting whatever it's going to be that Hashem is going to throw at him. And in the coming weeks, we're going to look in all the gory detail at everything that Hashem is going to throw at David HaMelech. The Afal Pichin, that's not what he cares about. What he cares about is just what can he do to bring that relationship back. That is the tshuva me'ava, and that indeed is the tshuva where David can have the hope, and it's going to be, you know, hope which is affirmed, that he can come out of that process not only back at square one, but stronger than he was before, coming out of it whiter than snow, and coming out of it with having a lesson that David is ready to teach Klai Yisrael for all time. So I think that's really the perfect way to end this long experience we've had with the whole story of David and Bathsheba, and Ritz Hashem, looking forward next week to going back to the Sefer Shmuel. So Yishkach, ready for this. I think it was really, really great few weeks, and looking forward to more. Yeah, question.
One question is that, I mean, here David's asking for everything to go back like it was before, and you know, everything, you know, for the end of the story to be happily ever after, and it's not. There's so many problems later on that, with his children primarily, that it's not a story of happily ever after, and his relationship is different.
So the punishments are coming. I think that's the whole point, right? The punishments are coming, but are we going to see a corrupted David going forward? All of the you know, ways that David had just destroyed everything that he stood for. So are we going to see that, you know, like the evil version of David going forward, or is David going to be back to the David we've known and loved until then? And second, the point, the punishments are coming, right? David has sinned, he sinned severely, and he's going to be punished, you know, really more than anybody else in Tanakh. But he's ready to accept that. And the strength of the part of the tshuva process, it's not happily ever after in like the way that a regular story would think about it. But from a spiritual perspective, it really is.
Got it. Thank you.
Great point. Okay. Yashkosh, everybody. Have a great rest of the week. I'll see you soon.
Thank you.